It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Gentlemen, thank you.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Tennis Weekly with Joel, Kim, and Chris. On today's tour catch up,
Ruud gets revenge on Tsitsipas in Barcelona.
Rafa returns to the tour as Madrid begins.
And Garbiñe Muguruza announces her retirement from tennis.
Kim, Chris, today is the 22nd of April and we are here to catch up on the week in tennis at Tennis Weekly HQ. It's been another eventful week on the tour with Casper Ruud winning his first non-250 event, Elena Rybakina picking up her third title already of the season, Garbiñe Muguruza also calling it quits on her tennis career, and Rafael Nadal making his comeback onto the ATP Tour. So as always, lots and lots to discuss at Tennis Weekly HQ. And we've got a lot to celebrate today because, Kim, not only did Rafa return to the tour, Chris, we have a first red clay title for Sloane Stephens.
I mean, what a week. Who is the bigger winner here, Kim? Is it yourself or is it Sloane finally doing what she can do best on clay? I mean, I was watching the Rouen Slam rather than watching too much of, you know, Stuttgart this week.
Well, I think regardless, we should crack out the Hugos, the woo-woos, all of the drinks, because I think there's quite a lot to celebrate. Rafa's
all
return,
our faves winning,
Sloane's
right?
title, Muguruza calling it, you know, quits on a, you know, generally
fantastic
career.
That's a thing to
career.
Celebrate.
She's happy.
Well, you know, it's to celebrate that her career, she's moving on to pastures new. She's won her slams. We mark and honour her time on the tennis
and
circuit.
And at the top of the rankings.
Off she goes to teach more of her Zumba classes.
You could do it online, maybe. That could be nice. That could be an activity.
Be
will she be in Seville running a Zumba class when with her?
It's like, what's that website everyone, all the celebrity uses? Like, yeah, Cameo. Where it's a website where famous people can say video messages for people. Maybe Muguruza needs to do an online Zumba class. I feel like a lot of tennis fans would sign up for that.
I mean, she could have her own app called like Muguruza Zumba.
We'll take
it's
that.
It's like, it's totally, you know, it could totally be a thing.
She needs to forge her own path.
Absolutely. I think also there's other areas to celebrate, because I was looking at the challenger results, as you do, for the last week.
Sorry, are you
and
Chris?
Joel,
what?
I know, I've morphed into Chris because, you know, Chris is like looking at them
every
day.
Are you
in
an ITF 25 in Egypt?
Well, actually, Chris is more on the ITF app, isn't he? Looking at the...
He's the step below.
The step below both of you.
But Joel, I was thinking of you, you know, as I'm wont to do every now and then if I have to. But I was thinking of you because Lloyd Harris won a challenger title in South Korea. And I know he is one of your preferred players.
His favourite male tennis player, he once said on the podcast, Kim.
One time favourite, but not anymore because he got rid of the locks. He got rid of the locks.
Did he?
And now
they're still there.
Are they still there?
More fetchy. I think they're quite
fetchy.
I think his hair has had an improvement.
I thought it was more wilder than it is at the moment.
It's more of a choppy bob.
Yeah, it used to be wilder, which I think you probably quite liked, Joel. Mm. Maybe that's the sort of hair you secretly like yourself. I'm not sure. But I just thought, he's popped up. He got to the final of a challenger last week in South Korea. He's won the challenger this week. And, you know, he's back at, well, he's down at 149 in the world. Maybe this is the start of his resurgence. And we'll see more of him and his hair on the main tour soon.
Kim, does his long, wild hair give you nightmares? Because didn't he get a win over Rafa in
He got very close, didn't he?
Washington. Was it very close in Washington? I want to say Washington. Ooh. One of the American hardcore events, maybe.
Oh,
yeah, it's coming back. I think he did get the win.
He did win. It was 2021. It was the City Open. Very good knowledge.
Yeah, in Washington. Yeah. Yes. Okay.
Well done, Joel.
I backed myself for that. I wasn't quite sure.
I mean, he's your favourite player, Joel, so it's not that much of an
achievement. Yeah, I know, right. He's my favourite player now.
I can tell you when Sloane won the US Open, you know.
Well, Kim, another winner on the tour this week, on the tour proper at the top level, Rybakina won in Stuttgart. And I always love this event because it's sponsored by Porsche. And to me, it's like the OG event with cars and sponsorship behind the tennis court. And not to be outdone, they had three cars behind the main court. And I had to look this up. It was the Porsche Taycan 4S Sport Turismo. I don't know what any of that means. I'm not a petrol head. But apparently it's an all electric saloon, and the winner gets access to one of these vehicles. And when Rybakina was asked about this, she said that, to the disappointment of many, she doesn't have a driver's license.
Oh, so she can't drive this Porsche Taycan 4S Sport Turismo electric saloon. What a shame. What a shame.
I was thinking more that the organisers, they just need to give her some L plates with the car.
I wonder who could teach her to drive. I mean, is there someone like on the tennis
server? Maybe a fellow Kazakh can help her out.
While there.
That could be possible. But normally they drive onto the court. Yeah.
Kim, are you saying she needs to get a driving instructor as part of her team next? You know, she's got a coach, sports psychologist, all of that stuff, agent. She needs a driving instructor.
I think a psychologist could be quite good to drive with, right? You know, that could really keep you very calm in those very tense moments.
When you're practicing your parallel parking. But, you know, she could practice around the world. I mean, I don't think that's allowed, but, you know, you could practice, you know, if you go to your practice session.
That would be confusing.
Match,
which side of the road do you drive on? Go from country to country.
That would get tricky. But, can I ask you a question about this? So I remember Sharapova, when she won this tournament, I think she won it a couple of times, she drove the car onto the court and almost kind of drove it around the stadium a little bit. I remember she got behind the wheel proper. Did they bring it down for her, I imagine, in this case?
Well, I would assume so.
Health and safety.
I swear with Sharapova, I was like nervous. Like, oh my God, is she gonna crash it?
Where's this going?
She really did accelerate down the ramp.
Yeah. Could be a PR nightmare.
God, they would never do that at Wimbledon, would they?
On the grass.
I mean, churning up the grass courts.
What? That would put like tire dents into the
grass.
You
imagine?
They won't let the women play the week after, let alone a car driver on the courts.
Talking about women and men, Chris, I think that leads on to what's going on already in Madrid.
Well, I was going to talk about, you know, the PR disaster that you were just mentioning of Sharapova running over a ball kid. Well, we're already off to another famous PR disaster in Madrid, because we all know what happened previously with Feliciano Lopez, the tournament director.
Cakegate.
We had Cakegate. We had different size cakes. And then because of that, what ended up happening, he actually silenced the doubles finalists of the women, who were not allowed to give a speech. And they were pretty prominent players. I mean, you had Pegula was there. I believe that it was also Haddad Maia, Azarenka, and Coco Gauff, which is a very, very famous foursome that you would not want to silence, because they will speak out about what went on. So you'd think, heading into Madrid, we're going to go off without a hitch. We're really going to focus on this. And I was very optimistic that one of my favourites, Daniela Hentschikova, has been brought in as a consultant helping with the tournament. I thought, fantastic. We got a female perspective to try and keep Feliciano on the straight and narrow. But qualifying day one, on centre court, they put all of the men's qualifying. And on the second court, they put all the women's. No. You can't help them over in Spain, can you?
Oh,
what is going on?
You think they'd have learnt their lesson?
Just try and avoid it. The tournament's not started improper, has it? The main draw's not kicked off.
It doesn't bode well, does it, for the fact that Madrid, it's a 2-week event as well. There's
more days.
There's more time. There's more days for things to go wrong. And if this is the start, I don't know where we're going to end.
We need a bingo card of things that could go wrong during these 2 weeks, so we can see which one of us.
Well, are we going to get more birthday cakes? Because If there was birthday cake last year, surely...
They need one individual supplier, one cake, one size. I think maybe that would be a positive addition to the Madrid Open. Yep.
Yeah.
Maybe a square cake.
I wonder what what are the criteria for who gets a cake in the first place? Is it a certain ranking, or could they just have a massive cake to be shared amongst every single person as a birthday?
One big birthday party.
That
could be quite nice. Invite everyone whose birthday it is and they can come and all have a piece of cake.
Right. I just want some cake now. All this cake chat. Let's talk about Casper Ruud in Barcelona because he certainly deserves a cake for finally winning an event that is higher than a 250. Well done, Casper.
Incredible.
He got his revenge over Stefanos Tsitsipas from the Monte Carlo final, beating him in straight sets to claim the Barcelona Open, which was absolutely fantastic. And yeah, ticking off the biggest title of his career. What did you make of Casper Ruud? What was the difference between this final versus Monte Carlo from literally a week before? Chris, I'm coming to you first.
Well, I mean, I've been a bit fascinated by the last few weeks of Casper, because in Estoril, I was very surprised by the fact he didn't get that semi-final against Martinez, because ultimately he was the better player on the day, but he really didn't put the results together. So you'd have to say, looking back, I think he was trialing being more aggressive on the clay, and I think now it's finally clicking. I think it didn't quite click in that final against Tsitsipas, but on court he did say he felt like he kind of didn't really kind of give it to Tsitsipas last week. He kind of just laid back and retrieved the ball rather than attacked and kind of had the destiny on his own racket. So it felt like this week, apart from that first game where he got broken, which wasn't obviously ideal, he really just stepped up and played the aggressive tennis that he's been trying to play recently. And it feels like heading into the rest of the clay season, he's kind of sorted it out and he's probably playing better than he's ever played on clay, especially winning, you know, the biggest title of his career.
Yeah, he won 7-5, 6-3, got that first set, that, you know, which actually, looking at his statistics for this season, he's 26-0 this year when he wins the first set.
Wow.
Which, you know, that's implies Pegula-esque. He's an incredible front runner. Yeah. Joel, what is it about Ruud and winning the first set? Like, what makes him such a good front runner in 2024?
I think he just keeps it very level-headed and, you know, plays every point as it comes. And I think he goes on the court with a clear strategy. I always think that helps. And he's very unflustered. I mean, he's been to Grand Slam finals. He's been in these big occasions. And I don't necessarily think he gets overwhelmed by those moments. I think when he has lost in those situations, it's more he's just not been able to execute the game plan. And I think that was the case against Stefanos Tsitsipas in Monte Carlo, but this time round I feel like he played a lot more on the front foot, didn't let Stefanos Tsitsipas get a hold of the rally, and as a result he was able to dictate a lot more. And that is why I think he came out with a victory. And I think it's very, very good for him, because the fact that this is a 500 level event, I think it's going to give him the confidence and the belief that, you know, these bigger events, he can do it. Because, you know, up till now, a lot of people call him like a 250 merchant, can only do it at that level and not really anything above. But with this result, I think, yeah, he can go and kick on.
How much of a difference, I was going to say, do you think it makes the fact that obviously he's had multiple slam finals? He's had three slam finals, which is, I think it's the most of any of the current kind of mid-generation that haven't quite won a title yet, excluding Dominic Thiem. But do you think that this actually will have a big significance to him winning in one of those finals? Because obviously making a Grand Slam final shows that, you know, you've got the tennis to get to that level. And he's way better than obviously just a player that does well at a 250, reached the final in Monte Carlo the week before. But will this be a case of breaking his duck and then being able to really push on further?
I think regardless of what like level it is, the fact that he's won this final and it's not been a 250, I think he can take a lot to learn from that. And particularly at the moment, he's in such a good mood and he's got such good momentum. I think it can and will, I think, have a difference. I think he'll get to these times in tournaments with Madrid and Rome coming up, and he, you know, will look back on this and be like, yeah, I belong here, and, you know, I should be going into this thinking I can win this.
Takes the pressure off as well with all those points to defend.
Yeah, exactly. So I still think, yeah, there's, you know, it's a very exciting time for him. And you know, the fact that he has got big points to defend coming up in Roland Garros, he's certainly going about it in the right way in the build-up.
I think he's really carved out some decent wins, you know, over top 10 players this year. He's 4-1. He's had that win over Djokovic. Also, you know, this win over Tsitsipas, who's just crept back into the top 10, over Hurkacz as well. And now claiming the biggest title of his career. I think that confidence boost, you know, will hopefully spur him on. And either way, though, this final between Ruud and Tsitsipas, neither of them coming into it had won an ATP 500 event. Funnily enough, Tsitsipas had reached, well, this was his 11th ATP 500 final, and he's not won a single one of them. He's got a terrible, terrible record at this level of tournament. And also in Barcelona, this was his fourth Barcelona final. He's lost them all. Yet, you know, he's won 3 Masters titles. He's won the World Tour finals. Yet, for some reason, 500 level events, he just doesn't like getting over the finish line. He just can't do it. Is that just sort of a funky statistic? Is it, you know, who he's played in those finals? What do we think, Chris? Is there any reason for that?
I'm trying to think about some of the players he's faced in these events. And I know he's played Rublev a number of times. And I think he tends to play against some top players in these events. And I mean, maybe it's to do with motivation. I think in Monte Carlo, we've seen that he is very much playing his best tennis. And that does sort of buck the trend in terms of his form and his finishing at those events. I mean, he really is motivated. It's his favorite place to play. And maybe, you know, he's just a little bit less comfortable at the end of the week. Maybe he's a bit fatigued from being there. It's not obviously the same as like the big prize that you get at some of the bigger tournaments. But I mean, I can't really explain it. You just have to think that on the day he got edged out, because obviously he can play finals because he won one the week before. So I think that's one of those weird statistics that we're never going to quite get our heads around.
Yeah, and I mean, there's been other, you know, statistics where it's taken players a long, long time before getting over that finish line. For example, you know, we've spoken at length before about Felix Auger-Aliassime having like an 0-8 finals record and finally getting it done. So I'm sure eventually, you know, this 0-11 500 finals record for Tsitsipas, I'm sure he'll get it done eventually.
But do we secretly hope it's just going to continue and go on and
It'd
on?
It'd be funny if he won a slam and then was 0-15.
Yeah.
I mean, I know what I'd rather have. I'd rather have lost all those 500s for a slam. Yeah.
It will be like, if he does win a Grand Slam, it will be like Stefanos Tsitsipas, Grand Slam champion, ... But can he do it on a 500 level ATP tour event?
Honestly, and then you'll see all the memes that will be saying like, sure, they can do it at Grand Slams, but yeah, exactly. Can they do it?
Yeah.
Kasper, can he do it at the 250 level now? We don't know. Yeah. Maybe he's only 500.
He's left those days behind. Well, one other talking point from Barcelona was the return of Rafa Nadal, of course. It's been a long time since we've seen him on a tennis court, and he's back. It was about, I think, 680 odd days since he last played on a clay court.
Are we counting that, Kim?
It's on the calendar.
I've got a calendar. I've been marking it off every single day.
Like scrawling like one on the wall for each day.
Oh, gosh. But no, finally, he's back. Yeah, 681 days after his last match on clay and 103 days without playing or competing this year. He did get one win over Flavio Cobolli, but then lost his next match to Alex de Minaur. What did we make of Rafa's performance in Barcelona? You know, I mean, obviously quite rusty. It's been a long time. But, you know, it's positive that he stepped out onto the court. That is, you know, something to cling on to. But Joel, what did you make of Rafa this week in Barcelona from those two matches?
I mean, it was great seeing him back on the court. I mean, I always find it amazing that he steps onto a court that is in his own name. I mean, if that doesn't speak like legend, then I don't know what does. So just to see him back was great. And you know, it was an impressive first match, as you said, given, you know, the rust and the time off the court. And if there's one player I think that gives me sort of tingles and makes me think, ooh, can he? It's Rafael Nadal, regardless of the opponent, you know, he is served. But I think when it came to that second match against Alex de Minaur, all my sort of realities, I think, came sort of crashing down. And you know, Alex de Minaur is playing some of the best tennis of his career at the moment, and he's just not the player you want to face in your second match back. after a layoff, because he will run you round the court. And although it was competitive in that first set, you know, Demenor just ran away with it. So I think for Nadal, great to see him back on the court. He's only going to get stronger. He's only going to get fitter. And I think seeing, you know, players like Alex de Minaur and seeing that level that he needs to get to, I think he's going to go away and think about, right, how can I get back up to that level, you know, for Roland Garros? And I'm just hoping that he can continue to stay fit and injury free, and see him on the tennis court. I mean, he's in Madrid. It sounds like he's going to play Rome as well. So it's looking like he's going to have a full, he wants to do a full run up to the French Open.
What did you think about the level though, Kim? I was going to say, because I think obviously it's great having him back, but there are moments, flashes of brilliance, flashes of the Rafa from 2022, for example. That's how recently he was playing some of his absolute best tennis. But I'd have to say from watching it, it was very uncharacteristic in terms of the number of errors. So I do think that's probably what you're alluding to with the rust, because I think Alex de Minaur did not play particularly well either. I think it was quite a cagey match from both, obviously playing against someone as high profile as Nadal. As you say, on the Rafa Nadal court, it's a big deal. He's obviously got a big Spanish influence. De Minaur, it's almost like playing an absolute legend of the sport. But level-wise and injury-wise, do you think that there will be a prolonged comeback here, Kim?
I think, being realistic, Rafa's, you know, he said that this would be his last year on the tour, and I think he's really just trying to have the physicality and then the fitness and get his body kind of used to playing more frequently so that he can kind of get through this season. You know, he sort of said that in Madrid he's going to see if he can get like a week of practicing with good players and get his body kind of used to a higher level of competition. You know, it was just kind of, Barcelona was like the first step, and it's kind of trying to get progressively more into, I guess, what he used to be able to do, you know, week in, week out. But I think it's just taking it a step at a time, being realistic. He did mention about Paris being in the lap of the gods. So I think we've got to set our expectations in line with that. We really just, you know, hope that his body can kind of cope with the demands. But at 37 years of age, with all of the injury troubles that he's had, I think it's about, yeah, being pragmatic and not getting carried away and just taking it literally like a day, a match, etc. at a time. I mean, one thing that has been announced is that he is due to play the Laver Cup later in the season, which is very exciting. However, it has raised the question, is this where he possibly bows out? Is this going to be his retirement, just like Roger Federer, who retired at the Laver Cup a couple of years back in London? I mean, what do you guys think? Do you think that would be a realistic time for the curtains to be drawn?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I feel like it was Rafa bowing out in the exact same way as Federer. Feels like it wouldn't be the natural finish. For me, it feels like potentially it might be, you know, the French Open or Wimbledon, almost like as a victory sort of, not a victory lap, but like a final playing of the tournaments. And I'm not sure the Laver Cup quite has that sort of special place in Rafa's heart in terms of the triumphs, some of his greatest results. I think with Federer, it was because he wasn't match fit, so he couldn't play matches in the lead up to that. That was very much like the final exhibition. It made sense. And so I would say, as long as you don't book Ellie Goulding and no tears, then I'm fine with Rafa playing the Laver Cup.
I feel like Shakira might get booked rather than Ellie Goulding. Yeah,
he was in a video, wasn't he, once?
If Rafa's got to choose, was Gypsy.
Yeah, great knowledge.
Gosh, that was many years ago. He was in a music video. Listeners, if you've not watched it, go and YouTube
quite steamy,
it now.
Wasn't it?
It was, yeah. I'm not sure he'd get away with doing that now.
No.
Now he's married with a child, but I don't know. But yes, so we'll see. We'll bring the latest Rafa updates to everyone as the weeks progress on the clay and thereafter. And let's have a look at the other clay events that we had this week, because we had the Stuttgart event, the Porsche Tennis Grand Prix, as won by Elena Rybakina, who is now the proud owner, whatever she does with the car, but she
proud
is the owner
passenger.
Of Porsche now.
And it's probably sitting there still.
Yeah, she's not driven away in it, has she? That's for sure. But she won very easily, 6-2, 6-2 over Marta Kostuk in the final match. But she did have to fight her way through the week to get there, beating Iga Świątek in the semi-final and also Jasmine Paolini, Kudermetova. So a number of battles to make her way through to clinch that title. I mean, by beating Świątek, she's ended Świątek's 10-match winning streak as well. And really nice for Rybakina because she's really kind of, yeah, come into some form this week and clinched that title. Chris, what did you make of Elena Rybakina? We don't really equate her with being as at home on the clay, but do we need to think differently about that given her win in Stuttgart this week?
I mean, whatever the surface, she is some tennis player. And watching her play against Iga, I mean, it was very, very impressive, especially on an indoor hard court. We're in indoor clay, but indoor clay, I think, getting a win on the clay, I mean, it's Iga's best surface. She was almost never loses on this surface. So I think what's really impressive is that she came through those tough battles against top players. And then she leveled up again to play against Rybakina before she kind of ran away with that final. So I think she's a competitor, whatever the surface. It's just very hard to know what sort of form she's in because she's not playing as frequently as we have seen her previously on the tour. And she's a bit of an unknown quantity at times. When she's on, she's really on. And when she's a little bit off, then she can fall a bit early in tournaments. So three titles is great, but it's a bit Kvitova-esque to me where there are these weeks where she's almost unplayable and then there are other weeks where, you know, you might be able to get a chance in. So I think it's very significant, that win on clay, and I think probably if you're eager, that's one that you'll be thinking about for a while to come.
I mean, just on that, I mean, the Rybakina level, in your view, is it above Świątek? Because I was looking at their head-to-head now. I think Rybakina leads it like 4-2. Is it a case of if Rybakina plays her best tennis on the tennis court, she defeats Świątek? Is it that simple?
I think it can be. I think it comes down to the first serve. And that's what we always talk about with Rybakina. It's her biggest weapon and biggest weakness, with the fact that she doesn't often make more than 60%. She's got a very low first serve percentage average compared to some of the other top players. So ultimately, if she's landing those serves, then she gets into a great position up the court and then she's able to almost be at times unbreakable. Whereas even in this match, for example, there were 20 break points that she was able to generate herself, and there were 13 against her serve. So there's definitely the case that she's very dangerous on return, but then on serve, she can sometimes be a little bit unstuck. So I would say personally that if she's at her very highest, not necessarily that she's the better tennis player, but she's more likely to get the win.
And just a note on Marta Kostuk, you know, the finalist, she was unseeded, but she's really putting together a good season so far this year. You know, she beat Qinwen Zheng, Coco Gauff, Markéta Vondrousova to get through to the final. And, you know, against Zheng, she saved 5 match points. And also against Gauff came from a set and a breakdown. So really fighting her way through, showing great tenacity and, you know, spent a lot of tennis, was quite knackered coming into the final, which, you know, may well have impacted the scoreline somewhat. But is she a dark horse, you know, for sort of the next couple of tournaments, maybe at the French Open? Certainly not someone you want to play, you know, in early rounds. Like, where do we see her going with these results? Because she's really has been putting together a decent season, hasn't she?
She's 7 in the race, Joel. Is she going to make a breakthrough at a slam, do you think?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised come French Open if she does make a good run there, maybe to the second week and beyond. We've seen, I think, surprises in the past at Roland Garros, and I wouldn't be surprised if Kostuk goes on a run herself.
Could be a surprise finalist, just putting it out there. Ooh, we've seen it before at Roland Garros.
Well, we're going to come back to that, Kim, for our Roland Garros preview. I'm going to make sure of it.
You have to predict it, Kim, no matter what.
Well, it depends on the draw, maybe. But one player I'd love to also put in the same category is Emma Raducanu. You know, she's had
don't we all?
Decent results of late on the clay, you know, with the Billie Jean King Cup, now coming into Stuttgart, you know, with a wild card. She beat Kerber, she beat Noskova, she bageled Linda Noskova in one of the sets. And coming up against Świątek, 7-6, 6-3 it was. It was a close first set. I mean, Joel, what did you make of Emma out in Stuttgart? I think, you know, getting to the quarterfinals of this event, it's a pretty decent performance, and certainly her best performance in a long time.
I think she's playing some of the best tennis she's played in her career. I think, you know, she's carried on that form from the Billie Jean King Cup when she had that great win over Caroline Garcia, and she's just carried it through to Stuttgart. And, you know, even in defeat against Iga Świątek, she really pushed Świątek to have to think about how she was going to win that match, because I was looking at some of the stats and the fact that just even alone, Świątek committed 19 unforced errors against Emma. I think it just shows that she was being put into positions that, you know, by Raducanu that was uncomfortable, making her, you know, go for shots that weren't there. And yeah, it was very, very impressive. So again, another player, maybe like Marta Kostyuk, who is in that category of you just don't want to be facing them anytime soon, because they seem to be in a real purple patch at the moment.
She's got the confidence back, and I think she's got almost the way she walks. She's walking like she did when she was winning the US Open. She really has that air of kind of resilience to her. I think it's she really has the confidence in her game. She knows that if she's down a break, it's the same thing we saw at the US Open. She was not panicked at all, and then she came back in, won matches very comfortably. So I think what's great is that she's actually making players in a similar way to what happened in the US Open. Players almost combusted against her. Noskova did in that first set, and Emma was doing a lot well, but she wasn't playing unbelievable tennis. I think that there's definitely an intimidation factor of playing against a Raducanu who really backs herself on the tour.
She's playing with a point to prove.
I think she is, and I think it's to prove what her level is. And she thinks it's even higher than this, is what she said in the interviews on court. This is just the beginning, really. So I'm very excited to see what she can do this season, because it seems like she's fit, she's healthy, and she's really serious about her tennis.
It is really nice, I think, to be talking about her tennis, and some of the shots she did in Stuttgart were phenomenal. But it's just nice, I think, to talk about the tennis and not the body, not the injuries. Just let her get on with the tennis, be really focused on that. And she's putting it together.
Well, let's hope she'll be potentially in the winner's circle at some point this season. And one player who is also back in the winner's circle is Marton Fucsovics, who picked up the Tyriac Open out in Bucharest this past week. He beat Mariano Navone 6-4, 7-5 in the final. This is Fucsovics's first title since Geneva 2018. So it's been a while since he's been in the winner's circle. But yeah, coming through, defeating three of the top five seeds to get that title. And Navone, he's up into the top 50. Before this season, we hadn't really heard too much about him, but he got to one of the Golden Swing finals in February and falling short here as well, but perhaps a future name to watch. Any thoughts on Marton Fucsovics? I mean, he's been, I would say, a bit of a danger man in slams early on, I think, in the past. Not someone you maybe want to play, because we know that he can really produce it on the day. But Chris, any thoughts from the Tyriac Open and Fucsovics' win here?
I think at this point he's more famous for ripping off his shirt and flexing than he is actually playing tennis. So he must be quite relieved at the fact that he's actually got some silverware now, but he's able to talk about, as well as his gym routine. But I mean, for him, it's a big win. He hasn't obviously won, as you say, for a long time. His game, I would say, is a bit limited. I'm quite surprised this happened on clay. I think it's the nature that the 250 draw was not particularly strong at the Tyriac Open. It didn't quite attract some of the higher ranked players that you might have thought would have given it a go, given the amount of money that Mr. Tyriac does indeed have. So I think maybe players were seeing how this one went as to whether they will commit to next year. But I think more of the talking point,
the weather,
wasn't the tennis. It was the weather. I mean, I think Francisco Cerúndolo didn't actually play his first match until the Friday. And then he went out on the Saturday or the Sunday morning, potentially. It was all very confusing, but it was almost like a weekend event for him. So the weather didn't necessarily work out in their favour. And also the court drainage in Barcelona is exceptional. The court drainage in Munich is also very good. Tyriac Open, not quite as good. And I think that caused them quite a lot of problems.
Do you think it's justified you know, taking the license away from Estoril. I mean, they haven't had this event in Bucharest since 2016. You know, previously we've had champions like Ferrer, Verdasco, etc. playing. Gilles Simon, one of your favourites, Joel. But it's back in Bucharest. Tyriac Open has the license. But do we think it's, you know, is it going to be better than Estoril? I'm not so sure.
It's not directly taking it away for next year because of there being less weeks. The 250 license is with the Tyriac Open. But what we do know, what we talked about previously on the pod, is that Tyriac doesn't want this slot in the calendar. He wants a different slot.
He prayed to the weather gods.
I think maybe it's to do with the weather, but I think it definitely lends itself to potentially places that are more like Barcelona and kind of Estoril, just outside Lisbon, than you would have elsewhere, like the BMW Open in Munich.
Well, speaking of the BMW Open, we can go to Munich, where we had the event last week, where Jan-Lennard Struff took home the title, 7-5, 6-3 over Taylor Fritz. So this was Struff's first ATP Tour title, which seems kind of, I mean, surprising. I would have thought he would have picked up one by now. He's become the third oldest first-time champion ever on the ATP Tour. But yeah, clinching the title over, you know, the higher-ranked player, Taylor Fritz. It was absolutely freezing out in Munich, it seemed. Very damp, very cold.
So many layers.
As low as 3 degrees.
Oh, it was like hail at one point.
It's just ridiculous. But I mean, I did go there years ago and I remember my feet being so cold because I didn't dress appropriately and it dropped really quite low.
Sandals on.
The nicest weather for clay court tennis.
I couldn't think of anything worse to get, because they get lederhosen, don't they? The shorts as the... That's the prize.
He actually put them over his leggings.
Did he?
He did.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, there you go.
Absolutely. He looked like he was quite covered. But, I mean, seriously, on the weather, guys, this does feel like you wouldn't be opening up these clay courts in other countries. Like in Denmark, for example, at the moment, The clay courts are not open because it's not warm enough. But it has had a great lineup. But, I mean, surely this isn't the best conditions to be playing in.
It used to be in May as well, so that like it
Wait,
used
so
to
you
happen
were cold
in
May,
time, and it was still cold
and now it's in
then.
April.
Yes, yeah. So they brought it even earlier, you know, earlier forward. But
and it's becoming a 500, isn't it? It's getting
being upgraded,
promoted.
Yes.
So I mean, it's going to be a what same slot in the calendar, 500, and it's going to be cold.
I mean, that doesn't sound great. I don't think I'll be buying a ticket for next year.
If you want to play tennis in a freezer, go to Munich in April. But let's look at what happened in Rouen.
Finally, Kim. This should be our lead story.
Saving the best till last.
Best till last.
Sloane Stephens, champion on red clay. She beat Magdalenette in the final in 3 sets. It's been a long time. Sloane Stephens has been at this, you know, this stage of an event. First time since March of 2022. Chris, what did you make of Sloane's week? I know you've been following it avidly.
I have.
Every step of the way.
I've barely breathed because I just don't want to do anything that might upset the role that she's on. Because Sloane Stephens, I will say it and I'll say it again, she is an unbelievable clay court player, unbelievable tennis player. And I still think that some of the best tennis I've ever seen a woman play was against Simona Halep in that final of the French Open, where she was doing so many interesting, different plays and weaving a web in that final before she actually kind of went off the boil. But I'm a huge Sloane fan. Anyone who listens to the podcast will know that. And she played really well, really measured. She's defending beautifully. The serve is even working better. I think actually the fact that there isn't that much on it and it does sort of kick up a bit does mean it's a bit hard to deal with on the clay. And she's kind of steamrolled through most of her matches. She had the occasional wobble here and there. In the final, Joel, she did get that win over one of your favourites, Magda Goatnet. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
But I mean, she does love it. And this is a great way to start the clay season because I think she's been past the fourth round at the French Open more than 9 times. So
wow.
You really don't want to be playing her in Paris, and she'll be going into Madrid, Rome and Paris with an awful lot of confidence. And it's just a shame she probably won't qualify for the Olympics because she'd be a very good pick for that team.
It feels surprising that she's so good on clay because, you know, as again, I was reading like, you know, Americans growing up, just Clay is not as part of their, you know, culture and history as, you know, other court surfaces. And, you know, I think about like all the, you know, the top Americans, and it feels like Sloane Stephens maybe is the only top player who, I would say, clay is her strongest surface.
It is her favorite surface. She has said that. Yeah, I think there's something about, I think, her movement. I think she slides really well. I think also you have to be patient, and she's a very patient tennis player. I think arguably you'd say she plays a little bit too patiently at times, dragging the points out slightly too long. So I think it's really the court for a problem solver. And I think across three sets, she's likely to be able to solve that problem on clay. So very interesting result. And I think Madrid will be an interesting test because very different conditions. And we have some very different level of opponent in Madrid, that's for sure.
Well, we're going to take a very quick break now, but do join us in the second half where we'll be discussing Garbiñe Muguruza's announcement. She is retiring from tennis, the participation rules for the Paris Olympics, and we make our predictions as we take a look at the men's and women's draws for the Madrid Open. So do not go anywhere.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to the Tennis Weekly podcast. And now we're going to move on to a little par for the courts, which Joel, you have devised for myself and Chris. What have you got for us and our listeners today?
You're back as the question master.
I'm back into
the more comfortable role.
Comfortable confines of being the question master, the quiz master.
Red clay titles won by Sloane Stephens?
No, it's not. It's not that. But it is WTA themed, and I have actually made this a little bit creative because my original path for the courts question I thought was a bit too easy. So I've made it slightly more challenging, but I think it's quite fun. I think it's quite tasty. So I don't know if you spotted this week, Iga Świątek has become one of nine players, she became the ninth player to be world number one for 100 weeks plus.
Wow.
So naturally, I was thinking about asking you to name those nine players who have gone 100 weeks plus at the top of the WTA rankings. However, I thought that was a little bit too easy. So actually, I'm going to the opposite end of the spectrum, and this is my path for the courts for you and our listeners. It is the 10 WTA players who have been world number one under 20 weeks.
Oh my goodness, Joel.
Ooh.
So there are 10 players who have been world number one on the WTA tour for 20 weeks or under. Who are they? Kim, let's start with, I'm calling it now. Kim, let's start with you.
So less than 20 weeks. So that's like 5 months, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Carolina Pliskova?
That is correct. Yes. 8 weeks.
Phew.
At number one rankings on the WTA tour. So yes, correct.
Well, I've got to go for Muguruza.
That is correct. Yes. 4 weeks.
Just four?
As world number one. Yes, 4 weeks.
Goodness. I'm thinking Slamless number ones here, Kim, by the way.
That is,
I know, that's what I'm thinking.
2 out of 10. Kim, it's back to you.
Oh, it's difficult because I feel like this person that I'm thinking of has probably been longer than 20 weeks, but they didn't get a slam. However, I'm going to say Aryna Sabalenka, actually, most recently.
Aryna Sabalenka is a correct answer. Yes, same number as Pliskova, 8 weeks. Very well done. Chris?
I feel
like Chris is under pressure here.
There's only one. I've only got one more name. and it's Venus Williams. I know that she's under 20.
Really?
Yeah. I think it's something like 11.
Chris casually throwing in 11 weeks. I mean, that is absolutely bang on.
Is it?
Venus Williams, 11 weeks.
Can we end now, Kim?
At world number one.
I think I did.
So you are level pegging 2-2.
This is tough.
Kim, it's back to you.
It's so hard to know, isn't it, Kim, if it was just above or just below 20?
Yeah, I've got like names in my head, but I just don't know how long they were number one for. So I will have to take a punt, I think. Victoria Azarenka?
Victoria Azarenka is incorrect, Kim.
Oh, no.
51 weeks.
Right.
Victoria Azarenka was world number one.
So I've got to get one more.
So it's advantage Chris. So Chris, you've got to give me a correct answer or we keep going. Who are you going for? 20 weeks or less?
I'm...
WTA number one.
I'm quite stuck on this. I'm going to say... I don't think she was number one very long, but she won 5 slams. I'm going to say Sharapova.
Sharapova is incorrect. We go on.
Ooh.
How many weeks for Sharapova?
21 weeks, Chris.
Oh, close.
Just outside the threshold. So we go on. Kim, it's back to you. Have you got... I hope you do. Have you got another
for
name for me?
Probably at this point.
Yeah, it's now like, oh my God, I can't believe they said not said so-and-so.
Yeah.
Well, I'll just say the person that I was going to say ages ago, but I think they were longer than 20 weeks. Dinara Safina?
Incorrect, Kim. No, Dinara Safina.
This might be our longest run of incorrect answers.
Gut feeling.
26 weeks. I mean, so it was a good guess. Good guess.
I think I've got one.
But yes, 26
Kim.
Weeks.
I think I've got one.
Okay, Chris.
Is it someone from like the noughties?
Put us out of our misery.
I have a feeling.
Who do you think it is?
After Anna Ivanovic won Roland Garros, she then absolutely went to number one and then plummeted it. Like, so I think Anna Ivanovic. Mm. I think she's only a few weeks, really.
Anna Ivanovic is correct. Very, very good. 12 weeks.
Otherwise, Kim, we'd be doing this another round.
Number
well
one.
Well done, Chris.
So well done,
You've
Chris.
You've saved us.
You have won. But yeah, a few incorrect answers there.
That's quite surprising, isn't it? Some of the answers.
A little bit of a rarity for Chris to hear the...
I was 1 week
the,
off. Come
the
on.
Wrong buzzer.
One wrong.
1 week.
I mean, yes. Any other names very quickly?
I was going to go Yankovic because... I think.
Yep, you could have had Yelena Yankovic, 18 weeks.
She was someone I was going to say, but I thought she was longer than
that. I was thinking Osaka, potentially, and Yvonne Goolagong. I was thinking Crawley. I thought she was only added as world number one very late. It wasn't even registered because she was on the border with the open era, I believe.
Naomi Osaka would have been incorrect, but Yvonne Goolagong Crawley was correct, yes. 2 weeks, actually the least amount of time at world number one. I'll just go through all of the list now. So Yvonne Goolagong, Crawley, Garbiñe Muguruza, 4 weeks, Sabalenka, 8 weeks, Pliskova, 8 weeks, Venus Williams, 11 weeks, Anna Ivanovic, 12 weeks, Arantxa Sanchez Vicario, 12 weeks. You could have had Yelena Yankovic at 18 weeks. And two players you are missing, which are quite famous names. I thought Kim might be getting these. You could have given
Kim Clijsters, was it then?
Kim Clijsters, 20 weeks.
Another Kim?
One final player.
Amelie Mauresmo?
Not Amelie Mauresmo. No. Who? An American.
Lindsay Davenport.
No. Jennifer Capriati.
Oh.
Wow.
17 weeks. So there you go.
Yankovic as a slamless number one, 18 weeks. Venus Williams, 7 slams, 11.
Man. I can't believe Venus Williams only number one for 11 weeks, but I guess
that's
in the shadow of Serena Williams, I guess.
Competitive time at the rankings.
Well. That's been a very informative path for the courts. Thank
Tricky
you so much, Joel,
well.
For that. Let's have a look to see what's in the Tennis Weekly mailbag. We've had Sam from Texas get in touch with us via email and asking us a question about the Olympics. So Sam has said, it's now less than 100 days until the Olympics in Paris. And I saw that Naomi Osaka and Bianca Andreescu have announced they are playing the tournament. I was wondering how this is possible, as Bianca is at 220 and Naomi 197 in the rankings. Do you think it is right that they can play whilst players like Emma Navarro, who is ranked 21 in the world, would not qualify because she is the fifth ranked American and only four athletes can play per nation? Oof. That is a really good thought-provoking question, Sam. Thank you. Gosh, I don't know where to start with this.
Let's start with Marketa Vondrousova, because I feel like this question is about subtly or covertly about Marketa Vondrousova, because do you remember, was it the last Olympics?
Tokyo, yeah.
She basically booted out Karolina Mukova, who was the fourth Czech player. She used a special exemption, I think, rule to go in instead of Mukova. And then won backed it up and won a silver medal. So, yeah. I think it's interesting because I don't really think oh my god, you know, fourth player, this is just making up the numbers. But actually, it does make a difference.
It does. It's quite interesting because it then means that, because I had a little look into this, because I think it's about time that we figure out who is going to the Olympics, how it's going to work. So I think it's a very timely question, Sam. But
how does Andy Murray fit in?
Well, that's why I've got a clause in here that might help. So the singles draw will include 64 players for each competition, and the rankings alone determine 56 of those. But there's a maximum of four players, as you say, per country. So, for example, if there are nations with lots of players who are inside the top 56, then it actually means that if you're ranked below 56, you can still qualify. So that doesn't explain why Bianca is able to play and why Naomi are playing, but there's also other quota places that are available, and these are for different things, such as whether you've won kind of a regional tournament, such as the Pan American Games or the Asian Games, for example, or the African Games. So there's a whole other thing for that, but ultimately you're able to use your special ranking, and that's what Joel made a nod to there. So the reason why is because on the protected ranking list, Naomi Osaka is at 46 and Bianca Andreescu is at 67. So it's very likely Naomi will be able to play because of that. And Bianca might be just outside or just inside. But then there's the clause that I'd not seen before. There are two ITF places reserved for Olympic or Grand Slam singles champions who didn't qualify through other criteria, but are inside the top 400. So that means for you, Joel, Andy Murray could be there because he's won slams and he's won the Olympics multiple times. And maybe, and I'd be surprised if this was the way that Bianca Andreescu was getting into the competition, you thought maybe it would be another player. But I guess if you are the US, you're not going to give it to Venus Williams because you've got players after players who could play. So the question I would put to Kim, for example, here would be, do you think it should just be by rankings, or do you think that the protected ranking should count and all of these different sort of rules and quotas should be met when it comes to the Olympics?
Oh, it's very confusing. I think it sounds like a GCSE maths question
when
you're trying to work out.
If I have 56 places and I have to give two to...
Yeah. And one's going at 5 miles an hour, but the other's going at 20 miles an hour.
How fast is Joel going?
I can't compete.
Yeah.
It's difficult because, I mean, if the 20 of the top 40 players or 56 were all American, it would be very, you know, skewed. And I imagine they have this sort of quota in other sports, like swimming as well.
Yes.
So I think they need to be consistent with what other sports are doing at the Olympics.
Rafa might get in on the Grand Slam rule, though.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many rules and, you know, different exceptions. I actually can't, you know.
Get your head around
just,
it.
Whatever, whoever turns up on the court turns up. That's, I'm out. I'm going to fail my GCSE.
Do you feel bad, though, for Emma Navarro if she does miss out on that very competitive US women's spot at rank 21 in the world and not making it to the Olympics? What do you think?
Yeah, and if I was her, I would say, well, I'm in better form, you know, and I'm more likely to win us a medal. So yeah, I would be a bit miffed, and I do think there should be, I don't know, could it be done based on, like, yes, you, like, is there sort of certain time frames where, you know, although you might be, you know, got protected ranking or whatever, I don't know, is
you
there
must
can be,
play a bit more be, beforehand or something.
That counterbalance, yeah, you have to have played X number of tournaments
in the lead up
in the 6 months prior.
Yeah, that could be yeah, a good rule to exactly. have, because I think Bianca's coming back the week before the French, and then she's going to play Paris, and then she's going to play presumably the grass court season and use that rank protected ranking, because you can only use it for a certain number of tournaments. But basically, it's not set in stone, is what we'll have to say as well, Sam, because it's the rankings after the French Open. So in the race, Emma Navarro is still very much in the race, but someone might miss out, and Madison Keys might miss out. It's very tight. So
I think the A level question is devise the new system to determine who enters
it's
the Olympics.
It's worse than the Billie Jean King Cup qualification numbers, you know, for the finals.
Oh, it's, yeah. Why make things overly complicated? Let's move on to something simple, which is Garbiñe Muguruza retiring, which is quite clear cut. She's no longer playing tennis. And we say farewell to a former world number one, a former Grand Slam champion, and, you know, someone who we've enjoyed watching over the years. She has now said that it's time to say goodbye. It's the right time to retire. And, you know, she hasn't played since January 2023. She's been on an extended break, and she's decided to finally hang up her rackets. How do we feel about Muguruza evolving away from the sport, to quote from Serena Williams?
Is she evolving, or is she just fully walked away and just let us know now? Closing the door.
Yeah, I think for me, that you could see from her social media that she was enjoying her time off the court, and the more and more time she was away, the more and more I think it was like harder to see her come back and reach those high levels that, you know, that she's achieved in her career. And I think we're seeing more and more of women's players make retirement their decision, you know, go out on their terms. You know, Ash Barty's done it. Danielle Collins, you know, will be doing it this season. And, you know, Garbiñe Muguruza is now going out on her terms as well. So I'm happy for her from, like, that perspective. I think it's a big shame we're not going to see her back on the tennis court, because she's such a great personality, great competitor. Did I think that she would win more than two Grand Slams? Yes, I did. And maybe there's an argument to say her career to me is still ultimately wasn't, like, fulfilled to her the maximum capabilities that I thought that she possessed. But if she is happy, you know, chilling and relaxing and having fun, doing Zumba classes, then good for her.
I feel that, you know, she won Wimbledon, she won Roland Garros, fantastic. I just feel that maybe she had more to give in a way, but I'm thinking specifically of maybe an Australian Open that I feel that she really could and
that
should
match
have
against
won.
Osaka.
I thought
yes,
the Kenin match
in the fourth round.
Yeah,
in the final. Yeah,
two instances. Yeah, she got to the final. Yeah, but that for me, it was the year that Osaka won, and didn't Muguruza? Did she have match point?
I think she did. I think she really did. I think it was. Yeah. She was very much up in that match, and I think, I mean, she said herself that for her, I mean, she said that if 25 years ago, when I started hitting my first tennis ball, someone had told me that I'd become a professional tennis player and I'd fulfill my dream of winning Roland Garros on Wimbledon, become world number one, win WTA finals, I'd have said that person was crazy. And you feel like, you know, it's a bit like Ash Barty in the sense that she won, obviously, three slams and the WTA finals, and then she walked away from tennis because she has achieved everything that she would have ever wanted. Ultimately, obviously, she would have loved to have won more slams in those positions, but I mean, it must make it very hard to go through all of that again to try and get yourself back to a level that you're not sure you'll get back to, especially when at the end of her tennis career she wasn't finding joy on the court and she looked very, very anxious about it, and it was definitely not something that was bringing her joy, and the challenge wasn't bringing her joy. So I think we all knew this was happening. This was not something that we thought we'd even get an announcement from. Often you don't when players walk away, but it's quite nice because you know that they're not going to put themselves back in the ringer and have what might be, you know, a negative experience and not be able to go out in the way they want to, as Joel said.
Well, let's look at what's happening in the here and now, which is the Madrid Masters tennis. We've had the draws very, very recently, and we've got predictions to make based on the draws. But we also, before we get on to our predictions, there has been some interesting wildcard options on the ATP side. A whole load of names. Who, to be honest with you, I'm not 100% sure I know these players particularly well, but you know, that is part of the point of wildcards. Darwin Blanche.
He's playing Rafa.
He is indeed. 16-year-old, lowest ranked player in the tournament.
Blimey. I mean, if Rafa doesn't beat him, I'll be very worried.
I think he'd be worried
I mean,
too.
That's, you know, let's hope that's a good match practice for Rafa then. But yeah, what do you make of those wildcards?
Madrid do things differently. We've said before in terms of the scheduling is pretty wild, but the wild cards are famously wild. And I think Zizou Berg's getting a wild card and not necessarily a Spanish player like Pedro Martinez, who's had such a good run of form. He's ranked, I think, around 60 in the world. He's had to play qualifying and not made it. Kind of reminds me of, you know, the Australian Open with Roger Nova not being given a wild card despite being the number one ranked singles player for Australia. Obviously not quite that bad because there are many Spaniards in the draw, but I mean, is it refreshing, Joel, not to have all the wildcards go to locals, or is it just a bit strange?
It does feel a little bit strange. I guess it's a tournament. They can do what they want. There's no onus on them to do anything, but yeah, I guess it's, again, at the same time, it feels very kind of It hasn't felt transparent, I think, because of just how late
deals have been done. It feels like with IMG or whoever.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's all been done behind the curtain. But I still think we've got some fantastic matchups, and it's quite interesting, I think, to see Kim Rafa Nadal. If he does come through to the second round, he could have a repeat with Alex de Minaur from Barcelona. So yeah, are you a bit like, oh, I can't believe he could face de Minaur again, or yeah, what do you think?
No, I think actually that's fine, because I think Rafa might enjoy the chance to have a crack at him again, having very recently played
could have
him,
been Sinner,
knowing what to expect. Yeah, I'd rather he played ADM than Yannick Sinner. And talking of Sinner, shall we make some predictions? Because I may have put Sinner in my predictions. We're going to go quarter by quarter. Let's shout out our matchups, and we'll see who we've all ended up with as our champion at the end of it. Notably, yeah, there's no Novak Djokovic here, just to clarify. So Sinner and Alcaraz are our top two seeds. And, you know, will we be choosing Rude and Tsitsipas, who have been in recent form? Let's see. So quarter one, Joel.
Sinner versus Rude.
Oh, I've gone for exactly the same. Chris, are you joining us?
I'm actually not. I mean, I love Casper. I think he's brilliant. But I'm not sure. Rafa's always loved Madrid, and I think they play quite similarly. So I've gone for Norrie with the flat backhand and Sinner.
Mm, fair, yeah.
Well, I mean, it'd be great for Norrie to...
He played pretty well last week, I thought.
So, quarterfinal two, Joel?
Medvedev, Alex de Minaur.
Oh, okay. I've got Medvedev as well, but I've got Stefanos Tsitsipas.
He's played a lot of tennis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he's been playing...
I was sort of against Tsitsipas based on how much tennis he's played.
That's what I was thinking.
He's tired. Okay.
Well, we don't know. But I've gone for Ben Shelton on the red clay. He's finally made the trip over. And I've gone for ADM as well.
Okay. And quarter three, Joel?
Her catch, Echeverry.
Oh, yes, Echeverry, who did very well in Barcelona. I've also gone for him, but against Sebastian Baez.
An all-Argentinian affair.
And Chris?
I've gone for Fritz Echeverry. So I don't think we've ever all predicted Echeverry. We've never even predicted him for anything so far. So.
Oh, no.
Well, why not? Now is the time. And quarterfinal four, Joel?
I'm hoping he's 100% and he's gone over Munich. I've got Rune versus Alcaraz.
That's risky. Surely okay. That's risky.
I know both of those are risky, yes. Given Alcaraz's injury troubles,
yeah,
as well.
Injury.
So very, very, very shaky ground.
I mean, he hasn't pulled out yet, so we assume he's kind of okay, but we'll see. I've gone for Alejandro Davidovich Fokina versus Jan Lennard Struff for my quarterfinal okay. four.
I like the sound of that one. I've gone Rublev returning to form, and I've gone for Struff as well.
Yeah, because Rublev's not had a great few weeks. He's had some uncharacteristic early losses.
It's got to change his fortunes at some point.
Get back up there. True. So semi-finals. Joel, give us your semi-final lineup, please.
Sinner, ADM, Hercatch, Rune.
Ooh, okay. I've gone for Sinner, Tsitsipas, Echeverry and Struff. So
oh, that's
a bit of recency bias
halves.
With Echeverry and Struff.
I've actually gone for that exact same pair, Kim, Echeverry and Struff. And then I've gone for three of the four the same. I've gone for Sinner and Shelton.
Oh, okay. So we're quite similar. So I've got Sinner as my champion,
same.
Beating Echeverry in the final.
Same for Sinner, Struff here.
I've gone rogue.
Struff's going to make the final.
I've gone rogue.
What have you, Joel? What
I mean,
are you
I've
doing?
I've gone rogue because of, I say, Munich and how semi-final went for how this, that semi-final went for Rune. But I've got Sinner Rune in the final, and I'm hoping they're going to have an epic like they did in Monte Carlo. But I've got Rune as my Madrid Open champion.
Is he winning in 46 minutes?
Probably not. He's probably losing it in 46
if
minutes.
If you pull this
anything,
off, Joel, as a prediction, I'll be very impressed.
Come on,
no one else.
Come on,
Rune has predicted this.
No, it's very rare.
This is a bombastic prediction. Well. I mean, let's see if you're going rogue for the women's draw, Joel, because we've got Iga Świątek as the top seed and Sabalenka as the second seed. And obviously we've got recent Stuttgart champion Rybakina, etc. So it's a loaded draw, very stacked. So let's go quarter by quarter here. Chris, coming to you first. Who have you got quarter one?
Svitolina Sakkari.
Okay. Oh, Svitolina, you're back. You're backing her again. I've gone for Świątek against Sakkari. And Joel?
Świątek Buszkova.
Okay, so he's still going rogue. We like it.
Hey, Buszkova did well in Colombia.
Yeah, she did. Got the final of Bogota, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, altitude.
And Chris,
yes, that's true. Actually, the altitude, Joel's thinking.
Madrid.
Yes, altitude.
Altitude. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well done, Joel. Quarterfinal two, Chris.
I've got to go for Raducanu. I think she's going to do something very impressive. And I've got her facing off against Goff.
Goff, Raducanu. Okay. I've gone for Samsonova against Kudermetova.
You love
so
Samsonova.
Completely different. Yes, I
this,
do predict her quite
this
a lot,
this quarter,
actually.
To me, Joel? Is very, very open. And I've also gone Samsonova. When in doubt, go Samsonova. So I've gone Samsonova, Ostapenko, who's not really done anything in the clay season. So... On that rule of thumb, I'm expecting her to go far.
And quarterfinal three, Chris.
I've gone for Pavlyuchenkova, who does like playing in Madrid. Former semi-finals, she played quarterfinals here as well against Rybakina. Sticking with the champion from last week.
Oh, I've gone for exactly the same.
Fantastic
there.
Prediction, Pavs Kim.
Against
I feel
Rybakina.
A lot more comfortable when someone else goes for the same.
Well, and also, you know, she was a former French Open finalist not
of course.
So long ago. And Joel, quarterfinal three.
Kasatkina Rybakina.
Okay, well, yeah, I could see that happening. Quarterfinal four, Chris.
Paulini Sabalenka.
Ooh, I've gone Paulini Collins.
Ooh. Ooh, Collins is back, yes.
Yeah, Collins is back.
She's back, I think. Come on, Collins.
But she's not in my quarter. I've gone Vondrousova Sabalenka. Vondrousova had a pretty good run in Stuttgart.
First semi-finals since Wimbledon.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty good. So I'm going Vondrousova Sabalenka.
Get the tattoo needle going again.
What'd she get from Madrid?
She wins.
Get it primed.
A little bull.
Churros. Semi-finals. Chris, what's your lineup?
Raducanu is making the semis and she's facing up against Sakkari.
Oh my God.
All she had to do was win a couple of matches and she's back on my predictions. And my second semi-final was Rybakina Sabalenka, more traditional.
I've gone for Świątek against Kudermetova and then Rybakina Paolini. So, I mean, I love the variation in our predictions here. and Joel?
I've gone Świątek, Ostapenko, and then we're going to have a good old-fashioned ball-bashing Rybakina versus Sabalenka in my second semi-final.
They're the matches you want to watch, though, Joel. You'd watch those semis.
Yeah, I mean, actually, both semi-finals.
You're predicting what you want.
We're going to have some big first-strike tennis in the altitudes of Madrid.
And Ostapenko, you know, has a winning record over Świątek. So what are you doing for your final? Are you thinking Ostapenko?
I wasn't even thinking about that. I've still got my final of Świątek versus Sabalenka. And I'm going Sabalenka to defend her title from last year.
Okay. I've got a final of Świątek Rybakina. So recently they played, obviously, semis in Stuttgart. But I've got for Świątek winning this one. So I think I'm going with the number one seeds. And Chris, last but not least,
Raducanu is going to make the final. She's not going to win it. Woo! She's not going to win it, though. I think Sabalenka will just
she's
edge her.
She's too good to win it.
Just edge her. And she'll defend the title. I'm an optimist.
Fantastic. Well, I'd love to see Raducanu in the final. Let's get the prayer circle going. Why not?
Exactly. I mean, I could have gone for Sloane, but I just think that she's going to do well in Rome. I'm saving up that prediction.
Sorry, I just want to swap, actually. I didn't actually mean Sabalenka as my champion. I actually meant Zendaya. Zendaya's going to be my champion in Madrid. Yeah.
She's off the Challenger Tour and into Madrid.
Yes. Talking of the Challengers film, I'm going to book my tickets to see it this weekend. So very much looking forward to that one.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
And that, I think, brings us to a close. We'll be tuning in to Madrid, going to the cinema as well to see Challengers, and coming back next week to talk about both things, which is very exciting. So lots of tennis, both on the big screen and on the slightly smaller screen in our living rooms as well.
Listeners, I hope you've enjoyed our latest episode of the Tennis Weekly podcast. Remember to subscribe to us to stay up to date on all the action to come from the ATP and WTA tours.
We are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all major podcasting platforms out there. So if you like what you're hearing, then do make sure to leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
You can also follow us on social media or email the show. We're on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and X. And the handle for all of those is @TennisWeeklyPod. You can also purchase our delightful Tennis Weekly merch at Etsy.com/shop/TennisWeeklyPodcast. You can email us for the mailbag on tennisweeklypod@gmail.com, or do check out our website, tennisweekly.co.uk.
And we will be back next week at Tennis Weekly HQ, so I hope you can join us for that. But in the meantime, it's goodbye from Kim.
Goodbye.
It's goodbye from Chris.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. We'll see you again soon.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.